Liveline on RTE Radio 1 with bonkers.ie, Ireland's favourite comparison and switching website. Visit bonkers.ie today and start saving on your household bills.
1850 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Liveline. 51551 is our text number. Jonathan Bradley. Jonathan, good afternoon. And first of all, condolences on the death of your father, Shay Bradley. He died on October the 8th. He seems to be an incredible character from what you read and hear about him. But it's something people heard at the funeral that is exciting, a lot of interest to say the least. How are you, Jonathan?
I'm good, Joe. Okay. I'm good.
And what happened at the graveside?
Oh, well, we decided to, I suppose, give everybody a bit of a laugh at the very end of a somber ceremony. Mm-hmm. It was one of my dad's wishes that my mother wouldn't be too upset.
Okay.
When the funeral came to an end. Mm-hmm. So we planned it about a year ago, and I had my doubts about going ahead with it when everything was so serious, but I'm glad we did now.
And what did you do?
Well, we sat down and we had lunch about a year ago and planned it out, and he just recorded a little farewell message into my phone, and just sort of as a prank to friends and family as well, make everybody laugh. It's the kind of character he was.
So you're all standing at the graveside.
Yep, we're all there.
And then I think you knew about it and your mum knew about it, but what happened that surprised so many people?
Well, I knew about it, and my son knew about it at the very start, about a year ago. It was kept quiet, and I told my mother, I think, 2 days before the funeral, just to make sure that she didn't get the fright of her life.
Yeah.
And, of course, we told the grandkids as well. We didn't want them getting frightened or scared. And the main prank was to be played, of course, on his brothers and sisters and in-laws, cousins, extended family and friends, just for everyone to have a big laugh. And it went off with a bang. I mean, everyone that knew him close, I mean, the first one that started, and he started knocking and saying, hello, let me out.
It started with someone banging on from the inside of the coffin.
Yeah, yeah. And everyone got a bit of a fright for the first maybe 3 seconds, but because they know me dad so well, they knew straight away that this was the final prank on everyone.
And by the way, how did you do it logistically? Where was it? Like, I know people do leave mobile phones. Sometimes they bury, some people are buried with their mobile phone. Some people, some bereaved families still ring the mobile phone number of the deceased to listen to the answering machine or whatever. But how did you logistically organise it that your father spoke from beyond the grave, literally?
Well, the plan was to make it seem like we were calling him from... that there was a phone call going to be coming in through the coffin. Mm-hmm. But that wouldn't have worked out. So literally he recorded an audio into my voice memos of my phone in one take. And I literally just played that over a Bluetooth speaker that was hidden under the artificial grass.
And what was the reaction of those who didn't know about it?
Oh, they were first, I think they were first a little bit shocked, but then they just loved it. Just had a great laugh. Because he's one of those type of characters.
And by the way, how did he record the banging on the wood?
Well, that was me and him sitting down, having lunch together. When he'd done the recording, he was just literally knocking on the coffee table.
So... And did you play the full recording?
I had to edit out a little bit. But mostly the full recording. I couldn't edit out all of his F-bombs and his language. Because there's so many of them.
Well, tell us a little bit about Shay Bradley.
The character.
By the way, what age was he when he died?
63.
Oh, God. Oh, yeah. God. That's very young.
Yeah, he was young, yeah. He battled, he did a long, hard battle with cancer. Never gave up to the very end.
And what type of cancer was it, Jonathan, can you say?
Colorectal, it started off with, and then it metastasized and went to his lungs and brain, spine, everywhere.
So he was a character, but was he into pranks?
Yeah. I mean, he wasn't the biggest prankster. He was more so into just having a laugh and a joke. Mm-hmm. But he did always say, for years, he always wanted on his headstone, he always wanted it engraved, "I told you I was sick."
Yeah. I've seen it a few times.
Yeah, exactly. But then we were talking about this, of course, when he got better after the first bout of cancer. And because this was all done, everyone had this on their headstones, we just came up with this little idea just to give everyone a little farewell. I think it worked out well. It worked out very well.
And he recorded about a year ago, but did you mention it? Well, I don't know what condition the poor man was in as he was approaching the end, unfortunately. But did you mention to him in the last 6 months, "Dad, do you still want to do this?"
No. He was adamant at the time when he had beaten the first bit of cancer he had. He was adamant that he wanted this done. And there wasn't much more said about it. As he got sicker and sicker, we didn't really want to talk about his mortality and things like that.
And did he talk about what he wanted at his funeral, music or readings or poetry or...
No, not really. We played the music we knew he'd liked, but this was one thing that he said. It was just between me and him at the time, and he was adamant.
Okay.
I just cleared it with my mother first.
So the scene is, what graveyard are we in?
Bournebrina.
Under the Dublin Mountains, beautiful graveyard. The priest is there, he's finished the obsequies, he's finished his work.
Just literally,
Okay. And people are standing as they do when the priest finishes, they stand around, they gather around the grave and there's silence.
Silence, and it's very sombre and very... Now, my mother she doesn't take too well to the likes of being at the grave, so that's when she gets upset the most, especially. My dad remembered that from when... her father passed away, and he didn't want my mum to walk away from the grave being sad.
Okay, and can we play what the congregation heard, so to speak?
Of course.
Yeah, okay. Well, this is... You set the scene up, Jonathan. This is... your dad's coffin has been lowered into the grave.
Yeah, we lowered him down, and Father Michael Murphy from Kilimana Parish started the final prayers, and he'd done decorated rosary, and it was very serious and very sombre, and everyone was really sad, and I had my doubts at one stage. I thought this type of prank is not really conducive of this type of situation. You know, not very respectful, I thought, at first. So I was about inches away from not doing it, but then I just remembered my dad saying he wanted it done, so I said, "Oh, the hell with it, I'll do it, see how we get on." So I hid the speaker under the artificial grass of the where the muck is.
Mm-hmm.
Press play, and we asked the guy that's playing the bagpipes to stop, and then he started knocking on the coffin.
This is what people heard.
Hello? 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 Let me out! Where the fuck are we? Hello? Hello?
Okay, that went on like that for a while. But by the way, how did Father Michael react?
Well, he didn't. To be honest, I didn't really see much of a reaction from him. He, I think he was more so taken aback, maybe a bit shocked at first. But I think afterwards, I think he realised he was in good spirits.
And did he say anything to you afterwards that he was...
No, I didn't. I didn't get to see him.
Okay.
So I'm not really sure how he took it. Hopefully he doesn't... we meant no disrespect with it. It was just literally he wanted everyone to have a laugh. He was that kind of character where he used a bit of bad language the odd time, you know, so I just couldn't edit all that out. There was too much of it.
Okay. And I know you said it was literally touch and go. You were hesitating at the last minute. But were you tempted to say to the Padre, "Listen, would you mind awfully? I know you're in charge of the... We've asked you to do the obsequies at the graveside and indeed at the in the church. Would you mind if at the end of it we did a little thing that might..."
No, I was... Because if the priest had said no, then it wouldn't have went ahead.
Yeah, okay.
And then I would have regretted it. Because it's what me and my dad spoke about.
And what reaction are you getting, Jonathan?
It's phenomenal. I mean, everyone at the graveside laughed uncontrollably, and then it went on into the funeral refreshments afterwards. When we went back to the Red Cow, everyone loved it. And then all of a sudden, I woke up this morning to a frenzy of text messages, emails, people from all over the place wanting to know the story. I couldn't believe it went viral the way it did.
Have you ever heard of anything like that happening before?
No, Never.
But why has no one ever done it before?
Probably because of the whole... maybe it's seen as a disrespectful thing to do, but to be honest, it was meant in no disrespect. It was really just a bit of fun for the family and to make sure my mum and some of his nearest and dearest walked away with a smile on their face rather than being somber and sad.
And that's what you want. You want your well, you all and your grandchildren as well. You kindly mentioned them today. You want them to feel, because he's a very, very young man, and your mother as well. Obviously, it's a deeply traumatic time and upsetting time. But when she was okay. But I think you might have started a debate here. Because is it about life after death? Is it, or is it just a prank that people see it in? Because you've heard, well, I've heard, maybe we'll hear more today. I've heard stories about people leaving mobile phones in, and they get a shock a year later when they phone them the number, as they often do, for someone to answer. And what they've done, I don't know how it happens, but anyway, that's what happens. Father Iggy O'Donovan, Father, you're listening to Jonathan. Obviously, the family are very, very upset, but it was the father's wish. I didn't think the priest looked particularly happy. How would you have reacted, Iggy?
Yeah, well, sympathy to Jonathan first on the death of
Shay. Yeah.
And if I could premise my remarks, Joe, saying that I don't know any of the people involved.
Yeah,
or Shay,
well,
or
that, well, that might help, yeah.
Yeah, so I suppose I probably, if I had no warning, I would have been a bit taken aback at one level. But you asked Jonathan there if you'd ever come across anything like that before.
Mm-hmm.
And the closest I can come to it, I know at one time in Father Ted, Jack, I think, was suspected to have died only to reappear and shock Dougal and Ted.
Okay, yeah.
But no, there is a serious side, I've had no involvement in this whatsoever. And only a few weeks ago, Joe, I think we spoke, or at least I spoke on your program, if you weren't on yourself, on this whole thing about funerals and offertory gifts and what was and wasn't appropriate.
Always, yeah, it's always,
whiskey bottles or whatnot.
Yeah, yeah.
In fact, since then I've come across one where it drawn my attention about where the coffin was draped in a fleece of wool, because the guy who had died was a farmer, a sheep farmer. And God, I said, that's lovely, that's beautiful.
Yeah.
But if this is what she wanted, and I think maybe perhaps it might have been better if the priest concerned had been given some hint that there might be some little bit of action, so to speak. But I'm not attacking Jonathan or his family in any way whatsoever.
And what is it like, Iggy, theologically and doctrinally, as they say, and I'm sure there's a lot of other words I can't reach for at the minute, but what is, like, is it not fairly, the church does believe in life after death, doesn't it?
Absolutely.
Okay, so what's wrong with someone taking, if you believe in life after death, there shouldn't be any surprise if someone starts shouting from the coffin, even though it is a joke.
No, I suppose the dignity and decorum of a funeral and the support that the church, and indeed any organisation, give to bereaved people at that time is mainly for the bereaved family and so forth. And any time I conduct a funeral, and sometimes you can get outrageous demands for people want to do this, that or the other, or certain type of music or rock or heavy metal or Eminem or whatever it might be. I've got those requests in my time and I generally accede to them, generally do. But
well, if somebody did come up to you and said, Father Iggy, by the way, 51551 is our text number, Father Iggy, this is our plan. We're going to stand at the graveside. Obviously, it'd be very quiet at the end of the obsequies. And we're all standing there looking in, and suddenly we hear banging on coming from. It was very well done, by the way, Jonathan, in terms of production and the sound and the way you hit the speaker. Suddenly we hear banging from inside the coffin saying, let me out. What's happening? Is that priest finished yet? Get me out of here. What would you have said if you were told in full what was going to happen?
If I was told in full, I probably would have asked if the language could have been restrained a little more. You know, I probably would have, because, and it's not just that in this case, but by definition in our country at the moment, if the F word isn't brought into everything, you're missing out on something. So I just thought that might have been a little excessive, even by my standards. But
I'm glad I
also, I probably would have suggested that some warning be given to the mourners that there might be a little to expect something. But overall, I'm all for it. Everybody should get the most supportive send off. And it's one of the few things that in this country is still going very well. And indeed, it's an area where, if you like, the credibility of the church is still reasonably good in this country. The funerals and all that goes with them, and the support of send-off to a family and the support of the bereaved people. And I think Jonathan might agree with me there. And so that's very important. But each case to its merits, this is what Shea wanted. And, okay, it might have, shall we say, stretched things a little, but given, my God, the crisis and all I see going on around me at the moment in the church and elsewhere, I wouldn't be that pushed.
What did you, but by the way, while you mentioned the church, what did you think of, I mentioned it earlier, what did you think of the plea yesterday at the installation of the new bishop west of the Shannon, that parents should pray every single day for one of their children, obviously the boys, for one of their children to become a priest?
Well, I suppose it's a reasonable, you know, if we belong to this institution and we believe in it at all, the idea that we should look for new members, I suppose, is a reasonable enough thing to do. But, well, I have a certain admiration for them. I didn't catch who actually made the plea, but I have a certain admiration for them because at the moment, praying for vocations, certainly in this part of the world and particularly in Ireland, which sounds a bit strange when you think of it, it takes a certain courage almost even to mention the word. So I have a certain admiration for them. I don't know, I'm at the point now I don't know if I even have the courage to say it.
Okay, I just brought it up as an aside almost. I listened to it yesterday and I just thought it was unusual, or maybe I shouldn't be judgmental.
You've hit the nail on the head there. The very fact that you say it's unusual, when you think of, just go back a generation or two, the fact that you would say it's unusual shows that the theological and moral revolution which has taken place in this country, mind you, some of it was way overdue, as I have tried to say many times.
Some people might call it a common sense revolution, Iggy.
Oh, yes.
Not just moral. You're calling it moral.
It was needed.
Okay, let me bring Marion in. 51551 Joe at rt.ie. Marion, you're listening to the fascinating debate about this. What do you think of the joke?
I just don't think it's very reverent. I think, you know, there's certain things around death and wakes and stuff, as I put on the end of my text about my own situation. But no, I don't think it's nice. I think you just let the dead rest and just get on with it. You can have a laugh after. You can do it after. But, I mean, the priest seemed to have been embarrassed at the grave from what has been said. And
well, Jonathan said he thinks the priest was okay about it.
Well, yeah, he might. Yeah. He didn't say he was or he wasn't. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know if he ran it by the priest first. But, I mean, I know it should be their own choice.
You're saying you should have kept the joke for the cup of tea or the glass of beer after.
No, I just don't think that's
the right thing. And what else? I see what you say at the end of your text. Recite it there. You don't like picked photographs.
Yeah, photographs of deceased people in their coffin laid out. Now, that was done at a funeral of a very elderly aunt of mine a few years ago. I wasn't actually at the wake. I wasn't at the funeral either, but my own brother was there, and he showed me these photographs of our Auntie Mary laid out. I just thought, God, no.
And who took the photographs?
Everyone my brother did for a start. Everyone was taking photographs of Auntie Mary laid out. And I said, did nobody say stop? Or, like, there's a time and a place for, you know, stuff like that, or just to be reverent and pay respect to the dead. I mean, that's the idea of a wake, in my opinion, you know.
Okay, stay there
He said they were taking pictures, were being taken there, and were being sent back to America on the whatever on the internet to the cousins and whoever relations that couldn't make it over. No, I don't know.
But they sent over photographs of the open coffin.
Of the open coffin of Auntie Mary laid out in it before I suppose the removal
I'm not being facetious here, Marion, but like, what do people say when they get the photograph? She looked well, or
that
2 weeks in Spain before she died did her the world of good.
Yeah,
what did they say?
But you see, people very often look lovely in death because all the pain and everything is gone, and you know, when the body's embalmed and everything. I mean, people do look well, but didn't think it was reverent,
Marion,
to take a picture.
Say with us, Marion. Is Eileen or Eileen? Eileen, is it? Good afternoon. Avian,
it's Eileen here.
Eileen, very good. But what do you think of what Shea Bradley organised for his own funeral, which is when the funeral service was finished and the coffin was laid into the grave and people were paying their final moments of silence before they dispersed, that suddenly somebody start banging, well, Shay start banging, it's his voice, start banging from the inside of the coffin, and some people got a fright, but they saw the funeral. What did you think, Eileen?
Joe, I thought it was absolutely brilliant. Okay. I mean, first of all, sincere sympathies to Johnson and his family on the death of Shay.
Thank you.
And he must have been such a character to have thought of doing something like that. It just, it reminded me of something that my own father would have done if he'd thought of it. But I just thought, it's the last kind thing he wants to do for his own family, was to take a little bit of the pain out of the day at the last minute and just have them laughing and crying at the same time. And I just thought he was brilliant to do it. Sorry, Joe. I said in my text, it's better to seek forgiveness than permission, because there's no way that a priest could actually say yes, do that. So
do you think so, yeah?
The priest probably thought it was hilarious, but has to keep a straight face. So I think it was great, Jonathan.
Well, we don't know what Father Michael Murphy thought, but we could see he's clearly visible in the piece.
I think he was shocked. Okay. I think he was shocked.
And Eileen, were you ever... Do you know when he was ever tempted to do it before? Like, that's the thing that shocked me, that no one has done it before. Okay, they've done these type of things on prank TV program where there's no one dead, but they pretend someone is dead, but the person gets out of the coffin, obviously. But this is actually quite unusual, and that seems to be a precedent.
Well, he obviously put a lot of thought into it, you know, to come up with a plan like that. I just thought it was brilliant, and it just says so much about the kind of man that he was, and I think was just so funny and so sad at the same time.
Okay, let me bring in... Thanks, Eileen. Danny Duras or Danny Doris? It's D-O-O-R.
It's Danny Duras, Joe.
Danny Duras, kind of said that to Danny. And tell us about you were at the funeral.
I was at the funeral, yeah. I'm a friend of the family there.
Okay.
We were at the funeral, and when you heard the speaker going off, we didn't know where to look or what it was. But it was just like Shay was there with us, and he planned his own funeral himself. Because no matter what we were or where we were, he was just the man that brightened up a room. And he'd make everybody laugh, and it was just him. So it felt like that he was there, and that he'd done it, and he planned it, and it was amazing. And I even told Jonathan there and the rest of his family, it was the best funeral I've ever had.
Okay.
It's not something you would say, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah. Tell us about...
It was absolutely brilliant.
Well, tell us about Shay Bradley.
Shay Bradley, he'd be in a room with 100 people,
yeah,
and you'd hear them, and he'd make everybody laugh. He'd make a joke out of everything, and there'll be never a dull moment when he's there.
And was he from Dublin originally?
Shay is originally from Dublin, yeah.
Yeah, and then you had Jonathan, who was talking to us there, still there, Suzanne James and Andrea. And what did he work at, as they say, in Dublin? What did he do?
Well, see, I wouldn't know much about Shay. I'd know the family.
Ah, of course, okay.
Jonathan and the rest of them.
Okay, Jonathan, stay there, Danny, and who appreciated the gag. What do you think of the point, I think, that... Eileen was mentioned that maybe they should have done the gag in the pub or the hotel afterwards.
I don't think Joe would have the same effect.
Okay,
I mean, when you're knocking from the coffin in the hotel room, it won't work.
Also, someone texts in to say that Shay Bradley broke the code. Wait for this. Broke the code to the spice bag. He walked out the ingredients of a spice bag. Have you got them, Jonathan? Did he take them to the grave with him as well?
No, he left them with us.
And what is it? What's in a spice bag?
There's a whole host of different ingredients.
And what possessed him to try and break the code of a spice bag?
He loved it. He loved the whole spice, the whole salt and chilli flavouring. In his later months, though, unfortunately, his taste buds weren't the same, and he wasn't able to make it.
Jonathan, what was Shay... Okay, we can understand people trying to break the code of Coca-Cola because they'd be billionaires if they did.
Yeah.
But when your dad, Shay, broke the code to the spice bag, what was he hoping to do?
He was going to sell like a a version of it online, mail order. You could just order in the spices and then sprinkle it over your chicken and vegetables.
Brilliant idea.
Yeah, your own spice bag.
And what happened to that idea?
When he got sick, everything went into concentrating on his health, trying to get better.
And what else did he, was he into cooking or recipes?
Yeah, he loved cooking. He'd done a lot of cooking when he was in the army in his earlier years.
Oh, he was in the army, okay.
Yeah, he was in the army. Then he went into the upholstery trade.
Was he a chef in the army? Because they used to say about the army chefs back in the day, the only people that were trained to kill in the Irish army were the chefs.
he was a chef in the army, yeah.
And so who else is saying then? Is Christmas stuffing somebody saying?
Yeah, because of his love for spices and flavours and food, his Christmas stuffing is famous around the family. And every year, more and more family members ask him to make the Christmas stuffing. So instead of making it in a pot, he started making it in basins. And he nearly had to go to... He was making it in the sink and basins, and he's giving portions to more and more family members. So we have that little recipe as well.
It's a great... Isn't it? I don't know if it's just in Dublin, but it's a great tradition in Dublin for people at Christmas, as well as giving you whatever gift they give you, to give you, wrapped in tin foil, a piece of their stuffing, if their stuffing is legendary. By the way, don't tell me the stuffing recipe is 6 foot under in Bowner Green as
no,
well.
No, he left that. He gave that to us. Yeah. He gave it to the family before.
Okay,
so we all have that.
Yeah, I'll have that. Okay, yeah. I think we should put these up online. I'd love to see the spice bag recipe. Rosemary, by the way, did he like Chinese food? Well, that's
that was his favourite. That was one of his favourite things, was having a Chinese after a couple of pints.
Shredded chili chicken.
No, his favourite was chicken balls, chips, and special fried rice.
Okay. That's the Chinese that you get.
That's the Chinese.
Rosemary Walsh, 51551 Joe at RT.ie. Rosemary.
Hello. Hi, Joe. How are you?
Good. What do you think?
Well, I was just listening to the story there of Shay's funeral, and it brought back memories of my own dad's funeral about 3 years ago. He was a bit of a character as well, too, and he used to sit on top of the fire, and we'd say, "How are you not burned to death?" And he said, "Oh, well, where I'm going, I need to get used to the heat." And then people had asked him how he was feeling, and he said, "Oh, well, I'm still above ground." So, I mean, he was always had a joke about funerals. So on the day of his funeral, anyway, we did all the usual palaver in the church, and we were at the grave, and things were going as per usual.
Yeah.
And then it came to the undertaker's putting his coffin in the grave.
Lowering the grave, yeah.
Lowering it, and somehow it got stuck. It just wouldn't budge. It just sat there, and no matter what, they were there for a few minutes trying to wedge it in, and someone in the congregation just said, "Oh, stubborn to the end."
Yes.
Because we used to call my dad Lazarus, because he kind of he was elderly, but he had a few instances in hospital, and we'd say, "Oh, this is it now, he won't recover from this." And he'd make him a miraculous recovery and be back up again. So we thought it was Lazarus going to be back.
And Rosemary, do you reckon your dad told the undertakers?
Oh, no. Because unfortunately, latterly, he would have had a bit of dementia.
Stubborn to the end when he couldn't get the coffin down.
Yeah, but I mean, like, it was a strange, because a friend of ours is actually an undertaker, and he said, "Oh, that was very bad form." Like, I mean, an undertaker, that's one of the prime things you do, is make sure the coffin fits in the... And, you know, it was just a standard coffin, it wasn't that it was... Anyway, but whatever happened, it got stuck, and people were there, kind of, we didn't know what to do, and then someone passed the comment, "Oh, stubborn to the end," and it kind of, people started laughing and lightened the moment.
So you thought what Shay Bradley organised for his funeral service was
well, funerals can be a bit maudlin.
Well,
you know,
obviously, because you were losing somebody, like,
yeah, but
permanently.
He in one way, a funeral should be a celebration of someone's life too. I mean,
okay, they seem to hit the nail on the head there, so to speak. They really got him. Okay, Rosemary Walsh, thanks indeed. People have now different stories about different funerals, including a tug of war with a coffin. 51551. We'll be back after this break.
Talk to Joe on 1850-715-815.
Shea Bradley was only 62 when he died, and he was buried in Bournebrina Cemetery this past Saturday. He had battled cancer for a long time, but apparently he was a character. About a year ago, in a conversation with his son, one or the two of them, or both of them, as I say, came up with the idea of recording a prank to be played at the graveside when the funeral service was finished and people were standing there paying their respects. And this is what people heard.
Hello? 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 Let me out! Hello? Hello? Let me out the f***ing knife in here. Who the f*** am I? Is that priest I can hear? Let me out.
And as you heard, people took it in very good fettle. It was seemed to be him, lock, stock and barrel. Desmond, good afternoon. It was your brother. What age was your brother when he died?
Unfortunately, he was 52.
Wow.
And he died in an accident. So obviously, our hearts are broken. Yeah. And but I'm not joking, Joe. Last night, I was on Facebook and didn't I see that video?
Yeah.
And I spent 2 hours looking for it again. I don't know where it went anyway. I just thought it was brilliant. But ours was slightly different.
And what was your brother's name, for respect? Do you want to give me his name?
Oh, sorry, Philip Lundigan.
Phil, okay.
Yeah.
So tell us, what happened?
Well, he got killed in an accident, a farming accident. And then everything kind of happened so organically.
Okay.
Just was... I actually don't know where all the planning came from or whatever, but we waked him in his shed. We had him for 4 days, and that was his... Well, we're always working on cars, so we had him in the shed.
Right.
You know, that was the place where... And then, you know, there was obviously all planning going on.
Right.
And then eventually we got back to the church, and there was a tug-of-war rope up to the churchyard.
Right.
After the ceremony... Then he was like, while he was laying in the shed, we brought him tea out constantly because he was always drinking tea.
Right.
Like the alarm went off in, the fire alarm went off in the house that day. It normally goes off and his daughter shout out, "Dad, breakfast is ready," you know, because that's how they'd know when something would be ready. But, like, the whole lot kind of, I don't know how it happened, but we gave him some send-off.
And what did you do with Desmond, what did you do with the tug-of-war rope?
Well, he was into the tug-of-war, so then on the way from the church up to the graveyard, the tug-of-war was there again, and they'd done a mock tug-of-war.
In front of the ahead of the cortege.
No, to one side of it.
Okay.
So he would be in the middle of it.
Okay.
You know.
And the coffin was the marker, then, was it?
Yeah. And then we carried on up, and we done all the normal things, and I was just there, like, you know, I didn't know really whether. And then my elder brother started, I don't know what you call it when you say like take the. He started using the words that a tug-of-war person would
heave
and all that.
Yeah.
And then the people dropping down the coffin dropped it down on those commands.
Okay. Now, you also say we all wore workwear. What does that mean?
Okay, so we all of us are working on cars and stuff
great.
Like that. So he wouldn't be into... dressing up or going to funerals or anything like that. So we wore clean working clothes and we put oil on our face, you know, just to pay respect to all the work he'd done for people and helping out. Sorry, Joseph. Helping out people. Yeah. And
he was always
I wanted to pay respect for his daughters and his family because... I just was doing work in the background, and somebody said to me, "Do that." I would do it. So this was quite. It was, you know, the whole thing was just you couldn't.
It was important, obviously. A young man died tragically. And why 4 days for a wake in the work shed?
Because people were coming home.
Okay.
And, you know, it just went perfectly. It's just now is the tough time. Like, you know. And when I saw that last night on the thing, and then when you started talking about it today, a big smile came back to my face.
Well, it was a sense of solidarity or someone else.
Well, we done that. We didn't ask anybody. We just done it. It was, we paid tribute to him. We sent him off the way we thought he would. And like his children and nieces and nephews and everything. Like, we come from a very big family. Right. And, you know, they were brilliant. And I say, they done all the planning. I just was, if they said jump, I said how high. You know, and I just want to pay tribute to them because he went to work and he didn't come home. So, and that's how we sent them off. And
You couldn't
write it now, Joe. I say those things went on that Finnegan's Wake would have been in the hate in the place, but it was brilliant. Like,
I'm so sorry to hear of that tragedy. And when you say it was a workplace, if you want to, you can answer.
He was driving a tractor and it turned over. We don't know what really happened.
And was it a modern tractor with the bars and the grade?
Absolutely, all modern
man.
Stuff.
A poor
you
man.
Know, all modern stuff.
And his children, as you say.
You know, this is the, it's every day, like I think 3 or 4 times a day he's dead or he's gone. If I'm using spanners, if I'm fixing the car,
you expect him to hand you a spanner, yeah.
But the thing is, we give him a great send-off. I don't know if I'm making sense or anything.
You're making the world of sense because people try and make sense of death. They try and make sense of unexpected death, and it can be extraordinarily hard. It can be extraordinarily hard. People can never make sense of it. The wound, which is, I think, for a lot of people, and we're hearing it from you there today, Desmond, it's a wound that will be there for a long, long time because you all loved him so much and he had such character. God rest Phil, Desmond, and thanks indeed for your contribution. Let me bring in, thanks, Desmond.
Thanks very much.
Bye-bye. God rest him. Edward Potts, you're a brother-in-law of Shea Bradley, the man from beyond the grave. Are you there, Edward? I hear the radio there.
Hello, Joe.
Edward, sorry, turn off. You have the radio turned off because people think I'm speaking from beyond at this stage. Now, Edward, tell us about, I can hear you loud and clear, Edward.
Joe, how are you?
Yeah, good. Tell us about Shea Bradley.
Oh, Joe, if I was to talk about Shea Bradley, I'd be talking for the next 7 days, non-stop.
Well, great. We'll keep it going because I'm fed up with Brexit.
Oh, God. Joe, Shea was not just a big man in stature.
Yeah.
He was a big personality. He had a big heart. He was full of empathy for all his family. His dear wife, Anne, he loved him. He loved his sons, his daughters, his grandchildren. He adored the ground he walked on.
And all this, what was it, his cooking, and he broke the code of the Irish spice bag. The stuffing was famous.
Oh, God, Joe. Shea had a great passion for cooking. He loved cooking. But Christmas time, Shea would it was like as if he'd become a little boy again.
Great.
He would start making the stuffing for the Christmas, and that would go out to the whole family circle. And he had that recipe which went back in the family for years. And we used to love coming over Christmas week, and he'd have the bags of stuffing ready for us. And again, like, once you got into the mood of Christmas, Shea had sometimes, last year I think he had 2 or 3 Christmas trees in the house. He was just a real Christmas person. He loved Christmas, loved the family, the joy, and then he loved the spiritual side of Christmas as well.
And was he a prankster? Because this is the ultimate prank. Playing a tape from inside a coffin, saying, let me out.
He was a prankster, Joe, in the sense of he was a good prankster. He wasn't like anybody that wasn't bad pranked. It was all like jest and fun. And I know when we walked away from that graveside on Saturday, Father Michael, the priest was fantastic, but the respect and the lovely ceremony. When that all finished and the bagpipes were playing and we were, you know, looking into the coffin, looking down at Jay, And then the recording came on. And first of all, I hadn't been aware of it. I was taken back by surprise. It took me some seconds, and then I began to realise the character that Shay was.
Well, did you get a fright initially, Edward?
What?
Did you get a fright?
Yeah, Joe, it was just...
Because I'm watching it and I'm listening to the sound. It was extraordinarily well produced by Jonathan and a couple of other people with the hidden speaker, the Bluetooth, so nobody would know, and then the banging from the inside of the coffin.
Yes, Joe, but, you know, anything Shay done in his life, he was a brilliant tradesman.
Was he?
And he taught everything out with his mind and his hands. He was also a fantastic salesman in later life as well. You know, he travelled the world, he travelled America, he worked in America, he worked in Australia, and every venture he tackled, he was a success. And I'm not surprised that Jonathan was saying there, they done this prank in one take, and I'm not surprised that you were even taken back that it was a good quality, and that's Shay.
Yeah. What was his trade, Edward?
He was an upholsterer.
Oh, was he?
Yeah,
okay.
He was great with his hands, but he could turn his hands to carpentry.
He was an upholsterer.
He wouldn't tackle it apart from anything electrical.
And he was an upholsterer who made gorgeous stuffing. That fits.
Yeah, well, I mean, he was unique in every way, and that's the kind of uniqueness he was. Not could he make stuffing, but he could stuff the sofas as well.
Exactly. Well done, Edward Potts, and God rest your dad, Jonathan. He sounds like Shay Bradley. Sounds like an incredible character. And, died way too young, by the way,
And Joe, can I tell you one other story?
Yeah, of course, yeah.
Joe, Shay was also a passionate Man United supporter.
Okay.
He loved his football, but he was also passionate about the Irish rugby team.
Right, huh?
And for the last 3 or 4 weeks in Tanna Hospital, I would go up to him on a Saturday morning at 7:30. He would ask me to get him a McDonald's breakfast.
Okay.
I would go to McDonald's and bring it over to him in the Tala Hospital. I'd be there at 8 o'clock, 8:15.
The game starts.
And I bought him an Irish rugby jersey. We had that in the back of his pillow, and we'd have the McDonald's, and we'd watch the rugby matches because they're on so early in Japan, and he loved all that crack.
Okay, well, he unfortunately didn't live to see us in the quarterfinal next Saturday. Against the All Blacks. Okay, Edward Potts, thanks to you. And Jonathan, kind regards, and lots of calls coming in about the legendary. He's legendary, Shay Bradley, at this stage.
And he used to always call himself Famous Seamus. It looks like that's actually
happened. Famous Seamus. But Jonathan, now that he's done it, and you've done it, and the family have done it, so to speak, it's going to be very hard for anyone else to do it because people will know immediately. But anyway. You did it, and you're still glad when you, as you say, it was touch and go, but I'm still delighted I did.
And just
glad
to finish off on it, we actually waited until the funeral was finished and the priest was finished talking.
Course,
so we done that at a recite. If my dad had his way, he probably would have wanted it done in the mass itself, but there was no way we could do that, you know.
Okay, God rest him. Young man, Shay Bradley, that's Jonathan Bradley. Thanks indeed. 51551. Michael Barrett, before I go, funerals. Your mother, 94 years of age.
Yeah, yes, Joe. She lived to be 90, she died overnight in her 94th year in perfect health and had her dinner on the night before, and she didn't wake up the following morning. But her one wish always was that she wanted plenty of music and dancing at her funeral.
Yeah.
So I was left with to be in charge of that, and I have two brothers and a sister, and so on the day she was being buried on the 18th of April 2018.
Mm-hmm.
We had about, when we got to the graveyard, there was a big turning table inside the graveyard made of concrete where you had plenty of room to turn. So anyway, we had 8 people lined up to dance, and we had about, I think about 10 musicians, about 6 borrowing players. She was always interested in run boys, and that was her life.
Wow.
So,
but you didn't dance on your mother's grave.
We danced by the side of it, Joe.
Brilliant.
But our instructions was, before she passed away, and she had instructed us for years back, that she wanted people dancing as she was being lowered into the ground.
Okay, and that's
so
what she got.
So my father was dead for a previous 33 years. She was a widow woman for 33 years.
Wow.
And as the people were putting down the coffin, there was 8 of us dancing, so I didn't actually see the coffin going down. The rest of the family were looking after that, and we were dancing gaily right alongside her as she was being laid into the ground.
Okay, lovely image for a start. Yeah,
it was. And when it was all over, actually a couple of weeks ago, I happened to meet the priest who was there on the day.
Yeah,
and he said to me, he said, "You definitely changed the way we bury people down here in West Limerick."
Okay, and she went feet first, and God rest her. Thanks to the
And she was never inside the door of a hospital only to visit people in her 94 years.
Isn't that magnificent? God rest her. Okay, what was her first name, Michael, just for respect?
Nora Barrett.
God rest Nora. Thanks indeed, Michael Barrett. Angus McInerney produced. Catherine Thomas is next, and I hope to see you in the Titanic in Belfast, Titanic Hotel tonight at 6:30. Back tomorrow, as Catherine Thomas is next.